Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Asma Khalid. We're going to talk now about a touchy subject for you all. I understand a lot of people might just want to tune out and not talk about this. We're going to discuss identity politics. And today, specifically, we want to talk about white men. That is something, as a brown woman, I do not often get a chance to discuss, particularly on air. But for some folks, just that label, white male, is considered a pejorative term. The Boston Globe recently published an op-ed titled In Defense of the White Man, in which a Massachusetts author denounced the blanket condemnation of white men with the hope that, quote, maybe one fine day we'll learn to eschew labels or at least see beyond them and focus on the humanity we share. The piece went viral, sparking conversation and controversy online about the politics of identity, the use of generalizations, and the idea of privilege. Joining us now from Springfield is Roland Marullo. He's the man who wrote that Boston Globe op-ed. Roland is an award-winning author based in Massachusetts. His latest book is The Delight of Being Ordinary, A Road Trip with the Pope and Dalai Lama. Hi, Roland. Thanks for coming on the show.
Hi. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you again. And we've got with us another white man. His name is Paul Marcus. He's on the line from Vermont. He's the former executive director of Community Change Incorporated, an anti-racism organization. Hi, Paul.
Hi. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing all right. So before we dive into any questions, I just want to give a quick call out to all you folks listening. Listeners, we want to hear from you in this segment. So let us know, do, in your mind, white men need defending? And how do you reconcile your own personal identity with this sense of group identity? You can call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And you can send us a tweet. Also, you can tweet us at Radio Boston. But jumping in, Roland, I would love to just hear from you first. And maybe before we even really get into specific questions, if I can ask you to just read a graph from your op-ed. I think some of our listeners might not be familiar with it. So why don't I just open up the mic to you there?
I'd be happy to. This is a graph that you chose.
Yep.
It's not hard to argue that white men have done more harm in history, from the keeping of slaves to the genocide of Native Americans and a thousand other examples, than any other single group. But it can also be argued that they have done more good in combating evil regimes, in developing medicines, in inventing everything from the automobile to the cell phone to various methods of birth control. White men discovered penicillin, Novocaine, the drug regimen used to treat people afflicted with AIDS. In many places, the chances are good that if your home is on fire, it will be a white man who comes to put it out. And if it were not for the millions of white men who gave their lives in World War II, we might all be starting the workday with the Nazi salute. And I'd just like to add the next short paragraph, mm-hmm. which is, associating us only with evil deeds, selfishness, and violence is as misguided as making general disparaging statements about any other group. Women, blacks, Muslims, homosexuals. Mm. Yet in certain circles, it has become acceptable, even laudable, to do just that.
Got it. Thank you for that, Roland. Can you first tell us a little bit about your motivation for writing this opinion piece? Why did you decide to do it, and why now in particular?
Asma, I've been all over the world, and it greatly disturbs me that the American national conversation has broken down. I despise racism and misogyny and homophobia in all their forms. And I feel like, and I feel it very strongly, that the root cause of all those hatreds is labeling people, putting everyone who looks a certain way in a group, and then saying negative things about that group. Mm-hmm. To my mind, that's the beginning of hatred and racism and so on, and it bothers me tremendously. So my main motivation in writing this was encapsulated in the line that you read, mm-hmm. which is that I hope that we can get past labels and one day see each other as human beings first.
Roland, what sort of reactions have you gotten from the piece?
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot more than I expected. I think 60 or 70% of the reactions have been positive. I've had some extremely hateful stuff on Twitter,
oh, wow.
which I glanced at and ignored.
Okay.
And I've had some very interesting exchanges, respectful disagreement and criticism with people who wrote me personally, or sometimes on Facebook I got into some of those exchanges that I've actually found wonderful and helpful.
Okay. So, Paul, I want to bring you in here. I'd love to hear from you. Did you read Roland's piece? And
I have.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What did you think about it?
Well, if I may, I'd like to just start with I'd like to ask Roland a question.
Sure.
So in my work, we in our workshops, we often start in asking people how they understand racism. And so I've probably asked this question to well over 10,000 people over the last 20 years. And so a question we ask is, how do you define racism in two sentences or less?
I think it's the grouping of people and then having hateful or negative or disrespectful feelings toward those people.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate that. So that's a very, very a common answer. And in fact, I would say the answers that we get from the vast majority of people sort of fall into that category. And it's really important that we clarify the terms we're using, because when I'm using the term racism or sexism or oppression, I'm meaning something very different. And if we don't make that explicit, it's very difficult to have a conversation because we think we're using the same word. So that when I'm talking about racism, the first thing I talk about is that racism is a system. And racism is a system that gets created when one group has had the historical and present power to take its prejudices and build them into the structure of the system, structure of the country. And that system impacts us all internally. It impacts our interpersonal relationships. It impacts our institutions, and it impacts our entire culture. And so often, in the vast majority of people, in my experience, have in what I would say of those four dimensions I just mentioned, an internal interpersonal understanding of racism. And that has having an internal interpersonal understanding of racism as opposed to a systemic understanding of racism has profound effects and impacts on how we think about these issues. And so and as I read Roland's article, and I appreciate the article in that it certainly prompted a lot of conversation, and I really appreciate you having this segment today. So as I see this article, much of this article comes from that internal interpersonal understanding of racism. So for example, I as a white male, I'm functioning in a system of racism and a system of patriarchy and sexism, and so by my identity, and I grew up in a working class family in East Hartford, Connecticut, so the class piece is related into that. But just my identity in that system, that has a major impact on my life. Yet as a white person, and those of us that are white, we haven't been conditioned or taught to think of ourselves racially, while in fact our race has a profound impact on who we are and how we see the world, and in many cases our ability to survive, our ability to get a job, our ability to get a loan, our ability to get health care, our lifespan, and all of those issues. And yet we've never had to think of ourselves as part of a group. And so I understand it, and so part of that systemic analysis allows me to understand that I'm not just Paul Marcus individual, and I also say that I'm more than my racial or my gender or all my other identities. I'm more than that. Yet those identities also have a profound impact on me. And so I'm by other people, by women often, and by people of color, I'm not an individual. I'm part of a group, and I'm part of a group that they've had a lot of experience with.
Paul, I want to give Roland a quick chance to respond, and then we actually have a couple callers on the line already. But before I jump to them, Roland, did you have a quick response there?
I don't know about quick, Ozma. That was a lot there, Paul. I am familiar with the idea of systemic racism, and I'm a little bit familiar with the work you do, and I salute you for that. I think probably we agree on our goal, what we would like to see this society look like, and I think we really disagree on the way of going about that. I appreciate what you're saying. I think there's a lot of truth to that. We certainly live in a system in which the laws and rules were created by mostly, if not exclusively, by white men, and oftentimes to their advantage, to our advantage. What I really object to is the grouping of all white men as if they're all the same. I am not George Wallace. Do I understand that I'm part of a system that can oppress women, that can oppress people of color? I absolutely do. But I guess maybe because I'm a novelist, maybe it's just the way I think as a person. I focus on the individual, and I actually think that if we're going to achieve the goal that we both want, the individual approach works better. I think when you start to group people, you lose as much as you gain. If you say all white people are guilty of systemic racism, I know a lot of white people right away are not going to listen to you. And if you want to convince them without being superior to them, without thinking you have the answer and they don't, and they somehow have racist tendencies that they don't understand, I think you have to start out with a place of respect for them as a human being, which is the place I try to start out from in my writing, in this piece, and what I say. So I think maybe some of it is semantics, but I think your rhetoric, to my mind, is not as helpful as it might be.
All right. So before, I just want to cut you guys off. I'm so sorry, just for a second, because we do have a couple callers, and I want to make sure that they have a chance to ask you all questions. So listeners, if you're tuning in just now, we're talking about the response to an op-ed in the Boston Globe titled In Defense of the White Male. It was written by Roland Marullo. We're also joined by Paul Marcus. He's the former executive director of Community Change Incorporated. And if you would like to chime into this conversation, you can give us a ring, 1-800-423-8255. That number is also 1-800-423-TALK. And I want to bring in a listener real quick. We have David. He's calling from Watertown. David, are you there?
I certainly am. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm sorry to keep you waiting. But do you have a question for either one of our guests here or a comment?
I have a comment. I am a lifelong liberal Democrat and also a historian. It seems to me in these discussions, white males is often used as a synonym or shorthand for the people who created Western civilization, which is more or less true. And white males and Western civilization are attacked for racism, sexism, imperialism, homophobia, etc. Now, as a historian who's thought about these issues a lot, I see it very differently. Actually, racism, sexism, expansion at the expense of other groups, genocide, slavery, all these things have characterized almost every civilization that we know of since the beginning of time. They were and have been the norm. They were the norm, for instance, among American Indians, who some tribes were wiped out by other tribes before white people got here. What is actually different about Western civilization is that it is the first civilization that decided that some of these things were evil and that something ought to be done about them. And that is why, in my opinion, the attempt to bash white males, which is really rules academia now, my old profession, is not only is historically inaccurate, and it's very dangerous, and it's very divisive. And I also think it's done a lot to get Donald Trump into the White House.
All right. Well, David, thank you very much. I want to give Paul a quick chance to respond to that. Do you have or either one of you, actually, Paul or Roland?
Yeah. Well, I want to say that I think we need to do all things. I talked about the systemic racism impacting us on all four of those dimensions. And so we need to think about it internally. We need to think about it interpersonally, institutionally, and culturally. That's one piece. I primarily would agree with the caller. And what I would say that fundamentally what he's talking about is that a system of white supremacy. And that system of white supremacy is built in well before the founding of this country when we look at you know, the conquistadors coming over, when we look at all of that history, when we look at things, the Catholic Church giving white Europeans the right to take lands. And you know, our nation is founded on that system of white supremacy. And so when I'm talking about this, I'm a white guy. I don't hate myself. I'm not beating up on white males. I think that it's essential that we acknowledge that we operate in this system, and it's a system of sexism, a system of racism that's killing us all. It's the system of white supremacy is destroying the planet, first of all. But secondly, I would argue that as men, the system of patriarchy that we're functioning in, it's stilted us. It's killed our racism and sexism have killed my soul. So we have to understand that I have it's in my own self-interest to be challenging these issues, and we can't ignore a history of the systemic reality of racism and white supremacy in this country.
Can I jump in right there? Because we just have a few more callers on the line. Go ahead.
Just quickly. Yeah. It's amazing to me, Paul, that you could take David's comment and move instantly to white supremacy, because what he said was that these kinds of oppression have existed long before white people controlled the civilization. It's an inherent aspect, horrible as it is, of humanity.
But
and you somehow shifted that instantly to white people. And I really reject that kind of superficial thinking.
So I'm going to jump in real quick because I want to bring in a caller. We have Kedra. She's on the line from Randolph. Kedra, you're there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, thank you so much.
Hi. So I just wanted to talk about, I guess, like white privilege. Like, why is that still a factor? Like, why do we, like, why are folks that are not, like, of, like, white skin treated, like, why aren't we paid the same? Why aren't we, like, why aren't we treated equally? Like, if they're, like, I guess, if, like, I guess racism doesn't exist or it's, like, not supposed to exist or we're not supposed to group folks when we're thinking about, like, white men or what have you.
Yeah. No, Kedra, that's a good point. I just want to jump to one more caller, and then we'll have a chance to respond. We have Margie on the line. She's from Saugus. Margie, are you there?
I am.
Hey, thanks so much for joining.
Hey, so, you know, I actually am going to contradict myself here. I initially called in to sort of offer up a great Audre Lorde quote, which is that the master's tools can never dismantle the master's house, which, you know, as a woman, especially working in academia, it's, you know, sort of how I choose to deal with sort of reverse sexism. But then my feminism took over having heard the brief quote that Roland provided from his op-ed, which I haven't read, but I will go back and read now. And I guess I take issue with your defense of the white man having in all of the, you know, quote unquote, great things that we should be thankful for, you know, your specific examples of medical advancements and, you know, armed servicemen in the Navy having, you know, fought in World War II. And if my house is on fire, then, you know, it's more than likely a white man that's going to come save me. My issue there is that a lot of those fields were and are off limits to women. Mm-hmm. It's only logical that a white man made those advancements in medical technology and vaccines and penicillin and all of those things, because the medical field and, you know, and the Navy and all, and, you know, the few examples that you provided were not accessible to women at the time.
So Margie, thanks. I'm going to give Roland a chance to respond. I know we had a couple calls there, both one about white privilege and just this conversation even that we're having. Kedra had some questions about that. And then what we heard just now from Margie.
Okay. Margie, I completely agree with you. I have two daughters. I was having a conversation with them today before I left home, and someone also wrote the same thing to me on Facebook. I absolutely agree. I think if 100 years ago, 50 years ago, 200 years ago, women had been allowed to go into the medical profession, encouraged to go into the medical profession the way men were, they would have done those same things. Nowhere in the piece do I say that they wouldn't have, and you should read the piece because there's a lot of negative stuff about white men, too. Absolutely. The society I'd like to see and what I devote my novels to, my life to, my writing to, the way I act in the world, is a society in which we can get the brain power of women, of black people, of Asian people, of Hispanics, old men, young men, everybody, giving them the opportunity to cure every disease that exists. I have absolutely nothing to say against what you just said. As far as the previous caller goes, we are still having this discussion. That's what prompted me to write this, because I'm reading a book now about Muhammad Ali, Sting Like a Bee. And it strikes me that 40 years ago, in the 1960s, we were having these same conversations. We have not solved this problem. We haven't come close to it. And my feeling is we should try, instead of what some people call identity politics, we should try to look a little bit more on the individual side. And again, Paul, I appreciate your work. I think we think alike in many ways. I just take it from the individual standpoint. I think if we taught our young people to respect everyone, no matter what they look like, no matter gender, race, I know it's idealistic, but that's my approach to trying to solve the problem.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. At some level, we all want to get there, yet, and that's what oftentimes people might call a colorblind approach. And there's significant problems with that. First of all, it denies the reality of race in my life. as a white person. So but if I'm say if I say I'm colorblindness, then my whiteness has no impact on my life. And yet, you know, I could be the nicest person in the world as I walk through life, but as I walk through this life, I'm treated differently. There's nothing that impacts my life more than the color of my skin on a daily basis in this country.
And I agree.
If we don't acknowledge that, as James Baldwin said in a letter to his nephew in the fire next time talking, he said he was talking about whites, are trapped in a history which they don't understand, and they can never be freed from it until they face it. And you're right, we've been having these same conversations, not for 50 years, we've been having these same conversations for 200 years, 250 years. And what we've failed to do in this country, we've failed to acknowledge the terrible contradiction of our founding, that on the one hand, all quote-unquote men are created equal, and yet on the other hand, that's clearly not the case. And we're willing, in this past 4th of July, everyone went out and celebrated the positive sides, or the quote-unquote positive sides of that contradiction. Yet as a nation, we haven't faced the other side of that contradiction, that we are a nation built on the oppression of African Americans, the enslavement of African Americans, the genocide of Native Americans.
Paul,
and we have not owned up to that yet.
Paul, I just want to quickly chime in with something and then have Roland respond. You know, I empathize with what you're trying to present, Roland. I myself am somebody who is Muslim. I am brown. I am from the great state of Indiana. So I understand the composite identities. I just want to know if you have a parting word of how you sort of relate to folks like that and sort of empathize in two ways.
I've tried to live my life by the
golden
rule.
We have about
10
seconds, sorry.
I've tried to live my life by do unto others as you would have them do unto you. I'm willing to consider other opinions and question my own opinions, but basically, in everything I do, I try to treat people the way I would like to be treated.
Thank you so much. That was Roland Marullo. He wrote a recent op-ed in the Boston Globe. Also, Paul Marcus, the former executive director of Community Change Incorporated. Thank you to you both. And that is our show today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Asma Khalid, and this is Radio Boston.